On this very special episode of Baseball Barbacast, we are organizing, presenting, preparing a time capsule with our very special friend, Bailey Freeman of Foolish Baseball. We are going to come up with all the items that represent the 2024 Major League Baseball season and put them in the proverbial time capsule and celebrate all that was in this fantastic season of Major League Baseball on this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that will dig a hole in the ground and put a bunch of stuff in it. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. We would never put Foolish Bailey in the ground.
We wouldn't dare, Jake. I am so excited to be joined by not just a special guest, but our co-host, our co-captain on this very special edition of Baseball Barbacast. His real name is Bailey Freeman, but we know him as Foolish Baseball, or more, the real, you know, ball knowers know him as Foolish Bailey. Bailey Freeman, welcome to Baseball Barbacast once again.
Thank you for having me. You know, in another life where I wasn't a baseball YouTube video essayist, I probably would have worked in a museum. I did an internship in like a museum archive. So I think just preserving this history is right up my alley.
Couldn't agree more. Now, Bailey, here is why you are here. Now, the first thing is that you have done this with us before, so you have a little bit of experience. This is an exercise. If you are new to, you see, you clicked on this podcast, you said, time capsule, what are these guys talking about? This is an exercise we've done for several seasons now, and we do it in the early stages of the offseason, where we look back at this baseball season that was, the Major League Baseball season that was, and we pick items to commemorate the season that in however many years we would be able to open up this imaginary podcast time capsule and pull out these items and be like, oh yeah, that was a thing that happened. Now, here's the fun part about this game. The items that we are coming up with, we don't actually, they can be completely nonsense. They do not have to be real items that we can actually get or not get. We're going to get creative with it. We have assigned Mr. Freeman the opportunity to come up with some of these items. We already had a lot of the same ones, and we're just going to vibe for an hour here, and we're going to go chronologically through the 2024 season and put some items into the podcast proverbial ground. Jake, any other opening thoughts?
Two rules. No people. You can't bury live people. It's not cool. So we won't be doing that. Number two, only one ball, shouts out Lance Armstrong. Because baseballs are so easy and simple. We could say, oh, we'll take the ball from that. We'll take the ball from this. We'll take that ball. If you open up a time capsule from 80 years ago and there's like 37 baseballs in there, that's not particularly compelling. So we get just one ball.
Yes. And the last thing I'll say before we get started is we will absolutely be forgetting things and not covering every storyline of the season. We are doing our absolute best. We would love feedback. BaseballBarbacast@gmail.com. Let us know what we missed, because we will miss things. But we are going to do our best. Now, Bailey, what are your final opening thoughts before we begin in spring training with a few preseason items? Having done this exercise before, by the
yes,
way, right?
So having done this exercise with you 2 years ago, before. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We did 2 years ago, we did break one of our rules and we did bury a person. We put Albert Pujols in there following the 2022
it's fine.
Season.
He made it out, and so, now he's managing in the Dominican Winter League, so it's all good.
I guess I just have to say I'm glad we're atoning for our mistakes.
Okay. I don't think we have or planning on putting any people in this year. Okay, Jake. So
I heard from
the
authorities. The authorities said you can't bury people, Jake.
Not
bad.
Super not cool. So again, we're going to go chronologically because I think that is a fun way to tell the story of the season. And Jake Mintz, why don't you start us off?
The date is February 14th. Shohei Ohtani is a Dodger. Jake Mintz and Jordan Schusterman are Yahooligans. Foolish Bailey is enjoying the offseason, presumably. And the Washington Nationals make the first bit of news of camp with a sign that says, I do not care how fast you throw ball four. A sign that was posted behind the catchers at their big boy bullpen mound down at their spring training complex as a reminder to their pitchers not to throw the ball that hard. Now, this sign received quite a bit of scorn because, boy, oh boy, is it pretty silly. Now, the best part of this is that the Nationals went on to throw much harder than they had the year prior, with their average fastball velocity increasing pretty significantly year over year.
But more importantly, they also threw more strikes. So chalk this up as a W for Mike Rizzo as they slashed their walk rate by, I believe, 2 full percentage points year over year. And I would say you keep leaning into it. Those signs better still be up in 2025 but you're going to have to make new ones because we are taking the originals and we are putting them into the time capsule. Mr. Baseball.
The Washington Nationals, this feels fake. The Washington Nationals had the same average fastball velocity as the Philadelphia Phillies. Mm-hmm. Full team.
How about that? They were throwing hard. And they also probably threw more ball fours than the Phillies did. But fewer than the year before. And that is what matters. So we take that sign and we put it into the time capsule. Our next item is a few items. Now, Bailey, this indisputably, now in retrospect, it's kind of hilarious. What was the truly the biggest story of spring training was the uniforms. Now, there are three elements to the new failed uniforms that we must celebrate / remember. There's the tiny letters. There's the fact that they were see-through in some very unfortunate places. And then there's the fact, which is sort of related to see-through, which is that if you sweated in them, boy, was it noticeable. So of those three storylines, which compelled you the most, Bailey?
It's got to be the see-through, because they were see-through to the point where you could very clearly still see the bottom of the shirt, how it was tucked into the pant. And that was the visual for me that was the most upsetting.
And so the lasting image from that specific storyline has to be the see-through pants of Giants third baseman Casey Schmidt, who you could see his stuff.
You could see more than you wanted to see, which was, again, that's not how pants should work, folks.
Now, a funny byproduct of this is that people started finding examples of baseball players' junk that had nothing to do with the pants. So, like, there were a lot of, like, unfortunate pictures of guys bending over in tight pants being like, look at the new uniforms, where in reality, you know, you're just zooming in on a crotch and you're going to get they're spandex, basically. You know, they're very tight. And so you will get some stuff. That was that uniform related, but we are going to put Casey Schmidt's pants in the time capsule. The two other elements, the sweaty jersey and the letters, we're going to put Carlos Rodon's sweaty jersey in the time capsule specifically. I haven't even checked this, but if I do sweaty jersey MLB 2024 and I go to images, I assume I will see Carlos Rodon. And so, he is the first, like, eight pictures.
Now, this was his first start of the year, I believe, in Houston. Was his when they debuted those grays, and my gosh, was he sticky. And so Carlos just became the face of sweaty baseball players, whether he liked it or not. So we'll take Carlos's sweaty jersey. We'll give him a call. We'll have him send it over.
I did some reporting on that, actually, for a story that I never ended up writing, where I was going to write, is Carlos Rodon actually that sweaty? And I asked his wife, and she said he is an average sweaty person, that he is not particularly wet. For, like, you know, me, I'm a sweaty guy. And if I became the face of moisture, it would not be perplexing. Mm-hmm. But for Carlos,
you're saying this was like a bad bounce.
Yeah,
like he didn't really deserve this. He's average sweaty. My favorite thing, certainly early on, because it was certainly the least, it didn't really matter, but it was so silly, is how small the letters were. And what we're going to actually do to remember how small the letters were is take some giant letters from the Kansas City Royals, a team that seemed to be rebelling against the new uniforms and just wearing the old ones instead. And because all the new ones, the letters were so small, these these jersey letters, which again had been very normal over the previous years, looked cartoonishly large because our perception had been completely warped. Cole Reagan's, I'm going to take the one of the letters from Cole Reagan's enormous letter jersey in spring training, which somehow was much bigger than we actually thought.
We'll take the G. G is like a big letter, like a capital G.
Yes.
Takes up a lot of space. Yes. Our brains are going to be melted next year when their letters are big again and they're going to look enormous to us. Mm-hmm. Bailey, are you prepared for that? Do you think you're going to need some time to readjust?
You know, when you get older, like there's a point in the aging process where you turn on the font size of your phone to the max. You know, I think my parents are maybe hitting around that age. So I think it'll be like that. Like we'll be another year older. I think we'll appreciate the bigger text on our screens.
I wear glasses now.
Right.
I'm not wearing them at the moment, but I'm with two four-eyed individuals. And so I'm sure that you guys probably appreciate the larger letters. So for the uniforms, we will throw in the big Royals letters, Casey Schmidt's see-through pants, and Carlos Rodon's wet uniform. One more spring training thing before we head over to Korea. And that's just a big freaking boom, Mike, from Fort Myers, Florida. As the Red Sox Netflix documentary was announced and production began on it, I was down there in Fort Myers and saw the show for myself. And boy, oh boy, was it unavoidable. It was pretty omnipresent with these big cameras rolling around.
But this is where we're putting it chronologically, because the truth is we talked about it less and less and less as the season went on. And so I think we're all very curious what the final product will be. But in spring training, it was like this novel thing and it looked very different over the course of spring training. So this is where we're placing it.
Bailey, what storyline from the Red Sox Netflix doc are you most excited to relive?
I don't know. I mean, even though he didn't play, I feel like Giolito's probably going to have a lot of FaceTime, would be my guess. Mm-hmm. He's part of the biz. His family's in the biz.
That's true.
The three most compelling characters, arguably, are Lucas Giolito, who didn't play, Liam Hendricks, who did not play, and Tristan Casas, who barely played.
That's true. It will be entertaining for people like us. I just don't think it's probably what they were anticipating, the kind of show were making.
Fascinated as to how they choose to show the Jaren Duran homophobia blast.
No, that is a directorial decision that they will have to make. But we will take that boom mic from Fort Myers and we will put it into the time capsule.
We will take it out of Rafael Devers' face and we will put it into the time capsule.
All right, friends, let's get on a very, very long airplane ride to Seoul.
Quickly on this, we don't have this on here. Do you remember the MLBPA coup that happened right around this time where they tried to overthrow Bruce Meyer and Tony Clark? That was wild.
I do now. I mean, I don't know exactly when during March. Was it after the season started? I honestly don't remember. That was wild. So if you have a suggestion for the item for that, maybe you can come up with it. But let's go to Korea. Let's the entire CBA. Let's go to Korea, where the season began in stunning fashion. And we do have one item that is actually on-field related, but let's just start with the obvious, folks. You might recall that Shohei Ohtani's interpreter, Ipe Mizuhara, was apparently lying to him for years and stealing millions of dollars from the biggest baseball star in the planet. Yeah, that was kind of a big deal. Now, what item are we going to choose that is going to highlight this storyline?
And look, I'm willing to forgive, but Ipe is the best argument for Barry a person.
That's a pretty extreme thing to say. I'm not gonna go ahead and not co-sign that. I think he probably deserves to be punished by the legal system, which it seems like he's in the process of doing. And I think he needs to go into federal prison and think about what he's done. That doesn't need to be in the time capsule.
Okay.
Here's the thing.
Gotta hear both sides.
What we're gonna go with here is where Ipe's gambling issues seemingly have begun, which reportedly was a poker match?
Fixture.
A poker match.
Do people say poker match?
No, they say poker game.
It's a game.
Ipe Mizuhara, poker game with David Fletcher, and who we now learn to be the true problem of this whole situation, Bookmaker One, aka Matthew Boyer, aka the guy that was like, yeah, sure, you can take as much money as you want because surely Shohei Ohtani is bankrolling it. So we're going to take a poker chip from that fixture, and that is going to be kind of symbolize the beginning of the end for Ipe, even if it was long before we all knew about it.
I would also like to chuck in just a regular English-Japanese dictionary. Mm. Because the most underrated part of that entire time is how the inability for various people to communicate with one another led to so much chaos. Whether it was the Dodgers not conveying things to Ohtani or Ohtani not conveying things to CAA, the Tower of Babel is what got this thing rolling on the path to mayhem. And so if someone had just popped out Google Translate, there's a chance this goes down in a much different fashion. Bailey, what do you remember from this specific time?
Well, in terms of the translation issues, it's the fact that Ipe gave an apology to the Dodgers locker room before their first fixture of the season. And Shohei didn't exactly know what he was talking about or apologizing for. And then he just dipped, you know, because he said, I have some legal things I have to deal with.
I mean, finishes the year 1-0. Ipe?
Yes, the Dodgers did. Yes, I believe it was after the first game.
Yeah,
right. He was in the dugout.
When he was like, oh, yeah. And then Ohtani was like, excuse me, what are you apologizing for? Also, just all the lying between Ipe and the Dodgers, all those things, to your point. There's so much here. There's so much to choose from here. This was obviously one of the biggest stories of the season. The fact that Ohtani was like, yeah, okay, I had millions of dollars stolen from me. I'm just going to go on and have one of the greatest seasons of all time anyway. That's fine. Is still one of the most astonishing things that we could possibly have, that could have possibly have unfolded after that.
I think the lasting impact of what Ipe did is unfortunate because it will stick with Ohtani forever in a way that I'm not sure it deserves to. And that is both internally within baseball of frustrated, jealous pitchers whining about how MLB is protecting their guy, which they would never say publicly, but I have certainly heard privately. And then like fans chanting at Shohei, what's the line, Shohei? Like that stuff is relatively harmless, but it's just an unnecessary blot on the legacy of an all-time great player that always does need to be brought up. Which, if you believe all the reporting, as we do, is by no fault of his own. And that's a bummer. One more encouraging development that happened in Korea was the major league debut of Jackson Merrill.
Yes. And Jackson Merrill, who had never played center field in his life before he showed up at spring training, and the Padres were like, yo, kid, can you give this a shot? And he's like, sure, no problem. And so because of that decision by the Padres and how well Jackson Merrill took to center field, we're going to take Jackson Merrill's infield glove, which very well may never be used again, so he doesn't need it, and we're just going to take it because this shortstop prospect just became an all-star center fielder in Korea immediately and it became one of the best players in Major League Baseball. And so the fact that he was a shortstop and the fact that he could learn center field with no issues whatsoever means he will never need that infield glove ever again. We, of course, want to make sure Jackson Merrill is represented in this time capsule, and that infield glove now belongs to us. Let's move on to April 8th. A big moment, not just in the Major League Baseball season, but in the United States, particularly in the path of totality. As Jake tries to create an eclipse with his camera. You did a terrible job, but you wouldn't know because you weren't in the path of totality like I was. Ha ha, suckers. Now, who else was in the path of totality?
But you have to live in Ohio, so.
Who else was in the path of totality? The Chicago White Sox playing in Cleveland. Who had the opportunity to see the eclipse at its full strength? None other than manager Pedro Grifol. But Pedro Grifol, in the early stages of managing the worst team, or one of the worst teams in baseball history, decided, no, I don't need to see this eclipse. There's baseball to focus on. Bailey, you wanted to celebrate this moment. What item will we be putting into the time capsule to celebrate Pedro Grifol ignoring the eclipse?
It is the saddest six-word short story in the English language for sale, eclipse glasses, never worn. The quote from Pedro Grifol about this is, I'll see videos of it, see what it looks like, but there's baseball. I probably shouldn't say that, but family and baseball. People don't believe it, but I live it. That's all that matters. I like that he threw in the family, because I think he realized if he said baseball is the only thing that matters, this would have come across really badly. So he was like, his brain was searching for what really is important. And then he goes, family, mm-hmm. not eclipses.
Yeah. But instead, it did still ended up sounding patently ridiculous. And the fact that he was so locked in, I will say, credit to him, they did win the next day, their second win of the season. They didn't win a lot after this. And there's a lot of White Sox things we could choose, but this is so funny, especially because it was funny when they were 1-9, and boy, was it funny when they lost 120 games after he got fired.
It's just a total misreading of the energy and a detachment from reality that you're good. First of all, you're going to suck. You didn't have to suck historically, but you're going to be bad. And acting like going out there and racking up W's is priority number one, even that is detached. Like, on May 3rd, like, Skip Schumacher probably realized that the Marlins were ass and then just focused more on player development and making it an enjoyable experience for people and not eking out every last drop of, you know, physical value from everyone. Grifol never was able to make that decision. This all feels very Joe Mazzulla coded to me, the coach of the Boston Celtics, except Mazzulla's intensity always comes across as like wonky and endearing, whereas Grifol, it was like kind of
No. Mazzulla comes across as weird too. It doesn't matter because they're the best team, not the worst team. You could be as strange and detached as you want if you're kicking everyone's ass, but it is obviously the opposite situation here.
If Grifol was managing the Yankees and said this, Yankee fans would be like, that's my manager.
They'd love it.
I don't know if I believe that, but that's okay. Eclipse glasses that were never used. I'm sure someone with the White Sox was like, oh, let's make sure we have some glasses for Pedro. You won't need them. We will be taking those. Let's go to April 19th. Another incredible moment for a franchise that was otherwise irrelevant.
Foolish.
Bailey, take
it
away.
I got it. Yeah, this is the best one for me. Hensley Mullins, a baseball lifer, really, from Curacao, played in MLB, NPB, KBO. He's been a coach at the major league level since 2010. He's been the Rockies hitting coach since 2023. The reason I bring all these things up, he's been on plenty of chartered flights in his lifetime. In his professional life, he has been on plenty. And yet we've learned on April 19th that a dream of his was to sit in the cockpit. And that is exactly what he did. And that caused an FAA investigation into his Instagram video, which has since been deleted. It was a United Airlines chartered flight that the Rockies were taking from Denver to Toronto. And he was up there, not just in the cockpit, but in the seat right in front of the flight controls, which is what we will be putting. I want the flight controls from that plane our time capsule.
We're taking them.
Unscrew them.
All right. So we're taking the steering wheel that basically he like kind of jokingly holds on to.
It's not a wheel.
I mean, you're holding it. It's not a full circle. Yeah. But it's still, you're holding on to something. You're still going, you know, 10 and 2.
So much great stuff.
Or I guess no, 10 and 2 is wrong. It would be more like this than like this.
You got it, buddy. The true crime here is not what he did. It's that he posted it. Because if he just goes in there and sits in the cockpit and just goes, no one ever finds out. I posit that other major league affiliated people did this season.
Yes.
On planes.
Okay. So
Bailey, agree?
But, do you agree with that?
I agree. And I agree it happens probably pretty often.
On charter flights. I think that is fair. My only pushback is your phrasing, because the true mistake. No. The true crime is what he did, because that is a crime.
And no, so, it's not a crime if you get away with it.
Okay. All right. Sure. Obviously, this is also just
the guy
a tough
who wants
look,
to bury people.
Tough look for the actual United pilot, which I have to imagine was punished severely. Who's all in this video?
My favorite quote from this is from Bud Black, who is still the Rockies manager somehow. And I'm just going to read this. This is from MLB.com, from an article written by beat reporter Thomas Harding. The headline is, Mullins apologizes to Rockies after cockpit incident. Since deleted social media video led to FAA safety investigation of United Airlines. Okay, this is the quote from Bud Black. Quote, Bam Bam, he apologized, Black said. I can't comment any further because that's what's being called an investigation of the matter. As far as Bam Bam goes, he apologized to the Rockies organization, to United, and to the team. Oh,
again,
Bam Bam writing a sorry note to United for going in the cockpit.
Which, the fact that this is his nickname that you have being referenced in this context is just sensational. Because if his name was just, you know, Tim Jones, I don't think this is as funny as Bud Black saying, Bam Bam apologized to United.
Bam Bam's flight. Bam Bam flew too close to the sun.
Okay. All right. We're taking the flight controls into the time capsule. We go to April 25th. Another highlight of a team's season, unknowingly. The Minnesota Twins win 12 games in a row, the longest winning streak by any team this season. And during that winning streak, Kyle Farmer, who will now be hanging out with Bam Bam in Colorado.
On the plane.
On the plane. Maybe Kyle Farmer can fly the plane with Bam Bam next time. Kyle Farmer introduces a summer sausage to the Twins home run celebration. Yes, a sausage wrapped just a sausage. They were just tossing the sausage around to each other every time that they hit a home run and they took it on the road and they... Maybe the sausage got to, you know, fly the plane wherever they were flying on the road trip. And this was disgusting and very funny. And hopefully we can take that sausage and put it in the time capsule. Very simple.
Totems are underrated in baseball. I told the story at the time of the team I played against in college who found a fish in the outfield during warmups and kept it on ice for an entire tournament in the dugout. And I hope that more teams use totems, even though it ended very poorly for the Twins. Let's move forward to April 30th. And we have some live animals descending down in the desert. Bailey, I'm going to kick you the rock.
April 30th, Diamondbacks. We have Matt Hilton of Blue Sky Pest Control, not X Pest Control, Blue Sky Pest Control, coming in to scoop up some bees behind home plate that delayed the proceedings in Arizona that day. And it's not just that Matt Hilton of Blue Sky Pest Control showed up and did his job. It was the element of showmanship. He hammed it up. He was amping up the crowd. He collected the bees and he threw out the first pitch. He got a Topps Now card. He truly was the story in baseball for about a 24-hour cycle.
He was very good looking. He was like, it all felt very staged, but we're going to trust that it wasn't and just say that it was one of the goofier moments of the season. So what are we putting in the capsule?
We're going to have to put in his beekeeping equipment. So like the suit that he wears to protect himself from the bees.
This was also against the Dodgers and Christian Walker hit a walk-off home run that night. And so it all felt very like, man, the Diamondbacks they're doing it. There was a thing on the big board that said game delayed due to bee colony. Thank you for your patience.
Yeah. And Matt Hilton was like, I got you guys. There was so much, but go back and watching that video, it was amazing. So, the fact that it was Blue Sky Pest, maybe it was early. Maybe this was some sort of early promo. Hard to say.
Very simple one next. May 5th. We are going to take Paul Skeens' Indianapolis Indians jersey from his final AAA start and throw it in the time capsule. It highlights the absurdity that this gentleman, who had finished third in the Cy Young and get MVP votes, okay, was still in AAA on May 5th. For whatever the reason that the Pirates did it, it's still ridiculous. And it didn't even work because by winning the Rookie of the Year, Skeens earned himself a full year of service time. And so there was, in the end, no real reason to keep him down that long. We will move forward to May 9th. The final game in the career of Angel Hernandez. Perhaps the most famous umpire ever. There's a Joe West argument, certainly. But I think Angel is on the Mount Rushmore of umpires you've heard of. Not a Rushmore you want to be on. Sure, us nerds know the good ones, but casuals only know the bad ones. We are going to put the final ump scorecard from umpscorecards.com in. We're going to print it out, and we're going to put it in the time capsule to commemorate the end of Angel Hernandez. Gentlemen, I propose that we take a break, and when we get back, we will pick up our glove and throw it into the crowd. And welcome back, Baseball Barbercast. The next day we're going to talk about is May 29th, Citi Field. The first one on this list that I saw in person, I was there for this. I could have wrangled this item into the time capsule if I had thought quicker.
Which makes me think, where is this glove now? Where is the glove that Jorge Lopez tossed over the netting and into the crowd after being removed for the game, after having a tough outing? I assume, Bailey, since you have marked this, that this is the item that you would like, or is there another item, or are we going to just track down this glove and put it in the time capsule?
It is certainly the glove. You know, one thing that's unique about baseball is there is finders keepers. You know, like whenever I watch a soccer game and someone skies a shot into the stands, they are expected to throw that ball back. And I think football, same thing. So the finders keepers is very much in effect in baseball with a baseball or a glove or a bat. Yeah. If it goes flying, whatever it is, you can keep it.
Yeah, how about that? Not necessarily true at every level of baseball.
True. Yeah.
Certain levels of college baseball, they need the baseballs. Please give them back to us. We can only afford so many. But in general, that is a great point. And I think I don't know where that glove is now, but I would like it. So we could put it in time capsule because it was a very important part in the Mets season.
I would argue that the Mets were the second most important team to the story of this season behind the Dodgers, because the Dodgers won. There's even an argument for the Mets over the Dodgers that I would not make, but someone could. And the storyline of the OMG and the grimace and the playoff pumpkin and all that begins here with a perfect valley. It is as good as it gets. Player throws a tantrum, team meeting, player released, chaos, could have gone south. Instead, they come back, they hashtag build back better, and they make the playoffs. And it has to start with a low point, and boy, does it ever. Anything else on this, Bailey?
Yeah, I mean, of course, there was the sort of translation. It's not really translation, it's just a misunderstanding issue, really. He said, he was the worst teammate in MLB, which was interpreted as I'm on the worst team in MLB. He was, DFA jettisoned from the team after that, indicative of a low point. And the Mets were 22-33 at the time. They went 67-40 the rest of the way.
Also worth noting that Jorge Lopez then signed with the Cubs and was like pretty good. So credit to him for getting back on track, even though it didn't happen with the Mets. We move to June 4th. Now, in the early stages of the season, we are still kind of getting the reporting surrounding Ipe and Shohei. And now we're having all this discourse about gambling and baseball and whether it's intertwined or not, whether or not Shohei actually did anything wrong or not. It was still a talking point. And then we get the news that several players have been suspended for betting on baseball, including Tucapita Marcano, B4L, banned for life, the Pirates infielder. And he got the harshest punishment because he was betting on games while he was on an active major league roster, while he was injured. And yeah, this is a big deal. And hopefully that was the end of that. And we won't be doing this again. But it was certainly an important moment in the gambling and baseball intertwine. And so I think we can just take his MLB player ID because he doesn't really need it anymore because he's not going to be a major leaguer anymore. I believe he is actually playing currently in Venezuela in the Winter League. But yeah, this is not something this is one where he talked about made an example of clearly a grave mistake. And hopefully the last big leaguer to make that mistake.
Better be a Mexican League All-Star.
Yes, most likely.
June 20th.
This was a memorable situation. We have the Rickwood Classic, of course, in Birmingham, Alabama. This was a very special MLB game that they arranged as kind of a celebration, of course, of the Negro Leagues. And the timing of it ends up being kind of stunning because this is, of course, when Willie Mays passes away as well. So this was, of course, a memorable game, and it would have been anyway, but there was a lot going on with kind of that week and that celebration in Birmingham. But what do you remember about that, Bailey? And what do you want to kind of use to talk about that game?
Yeah, so it's Reggie Jackson taking the mic. And I think what was so powerful about it is Reggie was not part of that first generation to integrate the game. He was the generation that followed. I believe he debuted in like 67. So he would have grown up knowing that someone of his complexion could play Major League Baseball. And I think just if I could sum up, what he said, he describes sort of the mixed emotions of visiting Rickwood and sort of the anger and the hurt that does not fade over time, even though we've made, a lot of progress in our society. There's this anger and this hurt to him that he put on full display for everyone. There was an explicit reference to lynching, the idea that if he mouthed off there, he would have been strung up in an oak tree. That's the actual quote. And it's one of those things where, it was unscripted. It was powerful. It was raw. And I think the Fox broadcast deserves some credit because they knew what they were doing when they turned the mic over to someone like Reggie Jackson, someone who's outspoken and very proud of who he is and proud of where he came from. So it was we're doing a lot of funny stuff on here. This was not funny. This was just a very powerful and real moment that was part of this great broadcast of the game at Rickwood. I will be putting in an item that was on the desk, an item I did not know about. There's a chocolate bar, a Reggie Jackson chocolate bar that was apparently popular in his playing days and has since been resurrected. So we're going to put on the Reggie bar. You can get a 24-pack of them on Amazon if you so choose.
Caramel
and peanuts. Yeah. So if you kind of maybe a silly item for a powerful moment, but whenever I watch the clip, I am slightly distracted by the presence of candy bars.
I would also like to put in the box score from the minor league game that occurred the day before, at which Willie Mays' death was announced. Willie, an Alabama native, that moment of the crowd shot standing up in memoriam for Willie in that place where he had played, that felt very powerful. And I want to, let's put the box score in there.
Absolutely.
Let's move on to June 22nd. And we're going to bring umpires back up. Hunter Wendelstedt. This was the second wonky moment of his season earlier on. He threw out Aaron Boone from a game when a fan sitting directly behind Boone yelled at the umpire. But we're going to reference a walk-off pitch clock violation, the first that we had in the pitch clock era. The Colorado Rockies had the bases loaded in a tie game in the ninth inning. Ryan McMahon swings and misses for strike three, but no out from home plate. A hero emerges, slapping his left wrist, pointing at the pitcher and pointing at home. Kyle Finnegan, who like did this more than anybody else this year or was like right up there, took too long, milked too much clock. And the bases loaded pitch clock violation on a 3-2 count sent McMahon to first and the winning run home. So we are going to put Hunter Wendelstedt's pitch watch. No, we're going to put his actual watch on his wrist into the time capsule. We're going to need that, Hunter. Thank you.
I think what I loved about this moment was that it happened at Coors Field. I love that it took a year and a half for us to have something like this, right? We, as soon as we hear about the pitch clock, we're like, oh, what's going to happen? Dude, is the game going to end like this? Like, it, and for this game between the Rockies and Nationals to be the one that ended this way was very funny.
I also love the video that the Rockies tweeted out was the like side angle video that you often get for really cool MLB moments, like walk-off home runs where the crowd goes nuts, except it is not a particularly impressive athletic achievement. It's just a guy standing there and benefiting from someone else losing track of time.
Let's go back to the Mets. On June 28th, Jose Iglesias performs his hit song, OMG, after a win over the Houston Astros. We're going to take his earpiece because they had him ready to roll as if he was like an actual real pop star, which he is. But this was his true, you know, the biggest crowd he had performed. I think a couple days earlier, there was video of him performing it at some sort of charity event at Citi Field, you know, with his teammates. But this was a, you know, a rockin' Citi Field. And it's just one of the silliest things I think we've ever seen in a post-game concert. I mean, they imagine you're the, we talked about this at the time, you imagine you're the Astros and you just lose to the Mets and you hear Jose Iglesias performing after the game. It's just so, so, so funny. And I've always wondered, would they have done it had they lost that game? I don't know if we got any verification on that.
They won 7-2 that day. Iglesias went 0-for-1. He pinch hit. He didn't even play. So he was fresh. And that's I true. Think that's what's great about this is that he did play, but barely. And so it has the aura of rolling straight from baseball practice to choir practice, High School Musical energy. It's got very much, I can't dance, I know you can, not a chance, no, embedded in it. You often will see baseball players holding a microphone. We're used to that. We're not used to a baseball player with a mic pack on the front hip and an earpiece in. So we're going to take that whole contraption and throw that into the time capsule as we move to July 7th. And we're gonna walk up the stairs to our duplex that we rent in the city of Pittsburgh. We're going to turn a corner into the kitchen. And Bailey, what are we going to see sitting on the island of our kitchen?
A delicious pizza box. Well, I guess the box isn't delicious, but the pizza inside presumably is delicious.
So Libby Dunn, girlfriend of Paul Skeens, LSU gymnast, social media sensation, wanted to celebrate Paul Skeens making the All-Star team. And how did she do it? She had balloons. Paul, you're an All-Star. Congrats. We got a couple glasses of wine and a box of Premonti Brothers pizza. And I talked about this at the time with someone who spent a little bit of time in Pittsburgh. I didn't know that Premonti Brothers was known for their pizza, but apparently, I still don't know if that's the case, but the fact that there was a small pizza waiting for, I believe, Paul Skeens and Kyle Nicholas. Maybe Jared Jones, too. I know he's normally in that crew, but definitely Kyle Nicholas is in the video. After what I believe was a really tough loss against the Mets earlier that day, is great. And we need to have Livy Dunn represented in here somewhere. And so we're taking that Premonti Brothers pizza box for Paul Skeens.
Two things about this. One, she was dunked on a little bit because the narrative was you make $3.5 million a year in NIL and this is your gift to your boyfriend. Which I understand. My retort is, no. Paul's also going to be financially okay. And two, this is not the only celebration they had. I bet they went out to a nice dinner as well. And then the other thing I want to emphasize here is their relationship, Paul and Livy, became a thing in the baseball context this year. Obviously, they had dated, and MLB's attempt to Taylor Swiftify her is both cringy and the right decision, because there are people that are probably tangentially thinking more about baseball who never would have, because Livy Dunn is dating one of the best pitchers in the world, right? And that's a good thing for our game. And I think we should be open-minded about that. Also, the juxtaposition of these two human beings being together in public is very funny. She is very bubbly and effervescent and outgoing. Paul is a lot quieter. Behind the scenes, I bet that they're just much more like each other than we realize, and that's just how celebrity relationships work.
We move to the All-Star Weekend. On Saturday afternoon, we get the first competition, hitting skills competition that we ever see of the All-Star Weekend. Only minor leaguers were participating, some of the futures game players. But most notably, there was a bunting component. And it's very possible there are some people listening to this that literally have no idea that this even happened because of the timing of it and when they aired it. And maybe, Bailey, you fall into that bucket. But being there in person for this, this was a truly strange event to witness. And I'm very curious to see where it goes from here. So, Jake, what are we going to put into the time capsule?
We're going to put one of those big old mats that they had lying on the infield for bunts. It was even more disorienting because this was when Trump got shot at.
Yes. The timeline was in a very strange place.
I remember not knowing that and tweeting out in all caps with the video Termar Johnson with the 8-point bunt, and someone turned to me like the world is like falling apart and we're in this bizarre timeline and you're tweeting about 8-point bunts. I was like, yeah,
it's like, yeah, that's what I'm looking at right now. So we have to do that. Bailey, do you have any idea that this happened and did this resonate for you at all?
I had a very good idea it happened. So a little backstory, I visited MLB HQ in May and they showed me that they were working on this. So I had a little inside info, a little inside baseball on this happening. So I'm excited for them. This kind of skills event actually has kind of a rich history in like NPB and KBO. You can find videos of, the East Asian baseball stars doing similar skills competitions. So it was fun to see it, stateside, I guess.
There's a way to do this in a way that's entertaining. Hopefully they get it moving forward. The next day, Foolish Bailey, I'll kick it to you.
The next day, the Home Run Derby.
Okay, are we going to do something with Teoscar Hernandez?
Look, congratulations to Teoscar Hernandez. He had a great final round against Bobby Wood Jr. It was pretty fun derby. I liked the format where you had some timed, some untimed, but this is about the national anthem, which made waves at this Home Run Derby. This was sung by Ingrid Andress. I hope that's how you say her name. She sang it in sort of the... If you've ever seen the Vine where the guy's doing like the indie girl voice where he's like, "Welcome to my kitchen. We got bananas and avocados," like that. Like she sings it in that voice and it doesn't go over well with the crowd. And it does become one of the more famous anthems. And I think there's something to be said about that, a memorable national anthem either way, because most renditions are pretty forgettable. You have maybe ones that are iconic because they're good, like Jimi Hendrix at Woodstock or Marvin Gaye at the NBA All-Star Game. And then you have the bad ones like Fergie's. And this probably falls more into the bad category. What was curious too was the very next day she updated her socials with the following message. I was drunk last night. I'm checking myself into a facility to get the help I need. I'll let y'all know how rehab is. I hear it's super fun. So it's just kind of poking fun at that. We wish her the best. I have tried to find any sort of update, but there's been no update on social since this. So Ingrid, thank you for at least delivering us a memorable national anthem. We wish you the best.
I will say this. Considering how bad the anthem was, like for her talent, I'm glad that she was just not herself. Like this is someone who has a tiny desk, right?
Well,
this is a real performer. Okay.
They didn't just pull her out of the crowd. I mean, presumably like, there was some thought that went into choosing her.
She's got chops. And I will say that this is an embarrassing moment that will follow her forever. Yes. But on the scale of things that can send you to rehab, this is relatively benign. And I am glad that she is getting the help that she needs in a way that, at least in this instance, did not harm the well-beings of any other human beings, except for Jordan and I who were there and had to listen to it.
Prediction, assuming she's doing okay, redemptive anthem. At some point. I don't know if they do it at the Derby again, but like maybe Texas invites her back. I could see that happening.
She is from Michigan, it appears.
There you go.
From Colorado, grew up in Colorado.
It doesn't matter where it is. I'm just saying there will be a ballpark.
Coors Field is perfect. Low stakes. She could do, if she had done exactly what she did in Coors Field, no one would have noticed. Our next thing in the time capsule is July 26th, right before the trade deadline. Randy Arozarena sent to Seattle Mariners to help them chase a playoff berth. Womp womp. But we get a very rare moment here, which is Randy Arozarena sitting in the outfield seats, walking through the crowd at a Rays game and saying goodbye to every fan that was out there who he filled their hearts with glee with all those home runs at the Trop. I'm going to take Randy Arozarena's sunglasses because he was wearing them inside. Famously, it is inside. I don't think Randy Arozarena ever wore sunglasses on the field at home in the Trop. And so to see him with sunglasses on there was bizarre. Also, we're going to use this to say goodbye to the Trop at all as a reference to the fact that Rays players will now need sunglasses while they are playing home games because there will be no more roof. They will be outside.
Randy Arozarena, though, still has roof in Seattle. So he should be, he will be just fine there. But I do think baseball players wearing fancy sunglasses inside is pretty standard. Doing it to watch the team you just got traded for, that's less standard. And that is why we are celebrating Randy. Let's stick with one more trade deadline item. July 30th, the Marlins trade their entire roster. Now, this is a process that took place over the course of the season. Of course, they traded Arias earlier in the year. They traded Jazz and AJ Puck in the days leading up to the deadline. And then they managed to swing like four or five more deals on deadline day to really tear it down. I would like to nominate a phone from either Peter Bendix, the GM who was making all the trades.
Pobo.
The Pobo who was making all the trades.
They don't have a GM.
Craig Mish, who reports all the Marlins trades better than anybody. We could just take Craig's phone. Or Jake, I mean, again, how these trades get reported into the league office is an interesting process. We could take either a desktop in the Marlins front office or a landline that needs to be called in, something that's signifying that somehow they managed to pull off all these trades in a small amount of time. Bailey, do you have any suggestions?
Perhaps an itemized phone bill. do people keep track of that?
Logs.
It shows all the calls you made.
We need the logs. Okay. All of Peter Bendix's minutes.
A couple more here, and then we'll take one more break. August 2nd, Blake Snell threw a no-hitter. There were a number of no-hitters this season. Ronel Blanco, Dylan Cease. There was a Cubs combined one, but combined no-nos are not exactly filling my tank. Blake Snell throwing a no-hitter, easily the most significant considering he had never gone 9 innings before in his career. And in Cincinnati, at my bachelor party, Jordan, we sat on the floor and we watched Blake Snell throw a no-hitter together. Just the two of us. You're the only person at my bachelor party. That's very funny. I would like to put 9 picture frames. Okay.
Okay.
9 frames. 9 frames.
He did it.
For Blake Snell.
Yeah. We've been so used to, you know, 6 and a third frames. A third of a picture frame.
6 and a third.
Almost done with that 6th frame. Nap, sorry.
Jordan.
That's it for you. Yeah.
6 and a third frames for Blake Snell. Inshallah.
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't. It all had to come together. The Reds were certainly helping out that day, but Blake Snell's no-no will definitely be the one I remember the most from this season.
I'm going to speed run these next two, and then we'll take a break. Bobby Witt Jr.'s Pablo Sanchez home run. He used a bat with Pablo Sanchez's face on it and went yard during Players Weekend. And we have backyard baseball coming back soon. And Bobby Witt had one of the greatest seasons ever to not win an MVP award in the 21st century. Easy. Get in there. Shouts out to Victus for making the bat. August 24th, Joey Votto's Buffalo retirement. Votto, legendary career. He was giving it a go in AAA. He hung it up in Buffalo. And then he drove to Toronto where the Reds were playing. Perfect symmetry and said goodbye to everybody. I would like to put Joey's Canadian passport into the time capsule because it made it easier, presumably, for him to get across the border.
And he has time now to get another one. So I don't really feel bad taking it away from him. I know he's spending a lot of time in Canada, but he also was doing a lot of traveling. So it might be actually super inconvenient to take his passport right now. So sorry, Joey. We're going to ground you in Toronto for a little bit. You can go play some chess while we get that sorted out with Canadian customs. And then you can get back to traveling the world.
And Canadian passport, very valuable. You can go a lot of places with that. Let's take a quick break. When we get back, we'll talk about Danny Jansen in the playoffs. And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. Jake Mintz, Schusterman, Bailey Freeman. Bailey, two-timing without consent from all parties in a relationship is not cool. It's not cool. Shouldn't do that. So why is it okay for Danny Jansen?
It's the element of time here. It's two-timing, but it's also one-timing, two separate times. August 26th, Danny Jansen resumed a game as a member of the Boston Red Sox. But before then, this very same game had been paused due to inclement weather when he was still a Toronto Blue Jay. Over the trade deadline, he has moved from the Blue Jays to the Red Sox and thus becomes the first player to ever play for two separate teams in the same game. There's been some wonkiness with paused and resumed games before. The one that I always think about is that Juan Soto technically hit a home run 10 days before his MLB debut because of the wonkiness of the paused and resumed game. So that's a classic. And in order to honor Danny Jansen achieving this feat, we are going to take his Red Sox jersey and his Blue Jays jersey. We will stitch them together as if he had a family member there that wasn't sure which team to root for.
I do hope that, now we spent time on this podcast talking about why this achievement did not impress us, because he didn't actually do anything. Like, it was just a matter of circumstance. So like, we were struggling with that. However, I will say, I do envy the folks that will pull up Danny Jansen's 2024 game log on Baseball Reference in however many years that don't know about this and try to figure out what happened, because it sure looks ridiculous when you pull up the game log, let alone the box score.
So 2024 game log in Baseball Reference.
Baseball Reference, Jake rocking his B-Ref shirt. Jake, what is our next item?
That's not the only thing I'm rocking, because right now atop my head, I have a hat that has three logos on it. It has a Paw Patrol logo, a Yankees logo, and a cartoon of, I believe, Rubble.
That's who Rubble.
Is the construction working dog in Paw Patrol. This hat was a giveaway at Yankee Stadium on August 22nd. It was like Paw Patrol Day, and they were celebrating Aaron Judge about to debut on television in an episode of Paw Patrol that aired on August 26th. Unfortunately, Aaron Judge, after being on television, 16-game homerless streak, the longest of his season, and had a 611 OPS over that span, which honestly is pretty high considering he didn't homer. That's kind of a lot of walks, I bet.
Yeah. It was a tough stretch, and the fact that we could pin it on Paw Patrol. Again, if you have not listened to our full review of that episode, I encourage going back and listening to it, because it was delightful. But yeah, his lucky bat, that would be the other thing I would put in here. But I think that hat that you have there, since we have one, we got to put that in time capsule.
Yeah. Very few other things on this list we can actually acquire. And so I think we should take advantage of the fact that this is currently resting on my head. September 3rd, Ben Joyce throws a baseball 105.5 miles an hour to strike out Tommy Edman, the fastest pitch of the season, and the second fastest pitch ever recorded behind Aroldis Chapman, throwing 105.9, I believe.
I think it might have been 0.7.
Well, I'm an
idiot.
I think
it was 0.9. Doesn't he have a tattoo of it? 105.9.
I tried to get you there.
Yeah. Well, but see, this was also pre... Oh, no, you're right. No, it was 105.9. Never mind. Okay, sorry. Continue.
We're going to put Logan O'Hoppe's hand tape. So I think his hand is wrapped up under the glove, which is a thing a lot of catchers do. And it's important, because if you're going to catch a baseball that's moving 105.9, it probably hurts your hand. Especially this one. One of the greatest frames ever, because Ben Joyce misses his spot. It's supposed to be away and the pitch is in, And so Logan Ohapi has to go the entire width of the plate to catch the ball moving 105 miles an hour. Unreal. September 14th, I'm throwing four chicken fingers in there because of four fingers that belonged to a chicken. Garrett Cole intentionally walking Rafael Devers, throwing up the four, pointing the first, saying thanks but no thanks. Four chicken fingers.
Barry, what did you? We never talked about this. What was your takeaway from Garrett Cole doing this?
I mean, just mathematically, never makes any sense to me. Analytically, I do respect the history, though. I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. Devers versus Cole. So I mean, I appreciate the moment just because it is sort of an acknowledgement in a way of the history that they have.
It's true. However, somehow not the most embarrassing moment of Garrett Cole's season. More on that later. The next day, Elliot Ramos of the San Francisco Giants does something we've never seen before. What does he do, Bailey?
Yeah, this is one of the most impressive things of the season, and I think it definitely deserves some shine. A right-handed splash hit into McCovey Cove, something that has never happened before. I do want to specify the rules. Has to reach the cove on the fly. That's what makes it a splash hit. That's very important for those keeping score at home. Also, I believe the Giants only keep track of Giants who did it, although I'm pretty sure no right-handed visiting player has also done this. So Elliot Ramos hits just the perfect storm ball into the cove. And who recovers this ball? None other than superfan McCovey Cove Dave. There's a picture of Dave where, in true superfan fashion, he has a hat that says McCovey Cove Dave. His shirt just says Dave. And then he gave some very interesting quotes about whether or not he would return this ball to Elliot Ramos. He was talking about Bryce Eldridge, who's a Giants prospect, big power hitter. He said, "Bryce, if I'm lucky enough to get his first splash hit, of course I'm going to give it to him free of charge. But I don't know Elliot Ramos. It's not that he's a bad guy. I just don't know him. He could earn that ball over time, but he has to reach out to me. Bryce follows me. Does Elliot even know I exist?" So I didn't know about this. I didn't know that you have to pay homage and kiss the ring to McCovey Cove Dave in order to receive your ball. So, and I don't like this attitude. I don't love super fans in general. I'm sure there are some good ones. So the object that we're going to toss in there is McCovey Cove Dave's kayak, because I don't want him to do this ever again.
Exactly. And I just want to say, we had a whole count. You hit all the main points when we talked about it when it happened. But the quote, "Does he even know I exist?" Well, he does now, and he probably doesn't think very favorably of you.
Right.
I'm getting a crew together to rob McCovey Cove Dave's house, take the ball, and return it to Elliot Ramos.
Oh my gosh. All right, let's go a few days later. September 18th. Bailey, you marked this as a Brewers item. What happened on September 18th? We have not really talked about the Brewers yet. So what are we celebrating here?
They clinched. They clinched the division. Oh, yes. September 18th, also a fairly early date to clinch a division,
sure.
Especially for a team that wasn't even necessarily favored to win the Central. I think we had two kind of fun Central teams this year, the Brewers and the Guardians. We're celebrating the Brewers with this one. And, when they clinched, this bit has been done before, but when you have a player who is under the age of 21, they cannot have the alcohol needed to celebrate in their possession. And so they provided Jack Centurio with a stroller celebrating his youth that had both non-alcoholic champagne. And I will point out with this, the champagne isn't for the drinking in a locker room celebration. That's for the spraying. You dump it on your head. You dump it on your buddy's head. You maybe have a few sips, but generally guys turn towards the beer. They grab a can of beer once they're done doing all that. And they did provide Jack Centurio as well with a Coors Edge, which is a non-alcoholic beer from Coors, in the stroller. So in order to celebrate Jack Centurio and the Milwaukee Brewers, we're going to have a nice cold can of Coors Edge.
So Miller does not make an NA beer. Now, I know Miller Coors is one company, and Miller is associated with Milwaukee and no longer the naming part of the stadium. Still, you would expect him to be drinking some sort of Milwaukee NA beer, and for Coors to take the cake here is a little disappointing. Always a good bit, and makes me think how funny it would be if in a locker room clubhouse you saw a player just making cocktails on the side, like very elaborate, like smoking rosemary and like mixing bitters.
Jackson Chourio deserves recognition here, so I'm glad he's representing the time capsule. Pat Murphy also, a season that he had. American Family Insurance doesn't make a non-alcoholic. They don't have one that was available.
No.
AmFam 0.0. Let's get that for Chourio to be
sitting. They make a mean 11.5 porter, though. September 19th, Shohei Ohtani strolls into the depot in Miami, needing, steps away from 50-50 and goes 6-for-6, homering thrice in one of the most unforgettable performances we will ever see in a single day. And this is where we're going to use our ball. We're going to say, oh, that 50-50 ball that someone bought for $4.39 million, eminent domain. That is now state-owned. Sorry, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Soviet Union, but you can just say that's mine now. So we're going to take that. That's ours.
And that's the ball. That's definitely the ball we want in there. So
we're going to bury it in the ground now.
Sorry. Sucks for you.
Bailey, you're a student of history. What do you know about eminent domain?
I'm not going to talk to you about eminent domain, but here's what I will say. By burying this ball that has been proven to be worth $4 million, we have greatly heightened the chance that this time capsule will be dug up and vandalized.
Oh, no. Hey, people don't know where it's buried. That's to be discussed off air, but still true.
September 20th. We've gambled enough on this episode, but we'll keep going. CJ Abrams, shortstop for the Washington Nationals, who made the All-Star team, is sent down to the Complex League over the last week of the season for no reason. No one is telling us why. It is not injury related. And then it comes out that Mr. Abrams was at the casino scene, spinning that roulette wheel until the wee hours of the morning. And so we are going to take the roulette pill, not a ball, a pill. From the casino in Chicago. We're going to throw that little white sphere into our time capsule. Our theory with this, Bailey, is that he didn't know that it was a day game, that the Cubs playing Friday home games at one local just confused CJ Abrams. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I just wanted to add, it goes back to the Bam Bam discussion where the problem was that there was photographic evidence of CJ Abrams at the roulette table at 5 a.m. or whatever. Which, again, there are players that are out gambling late into the evening as long as they're showing up the next day. And CJ Abrams did play in that Friday game, but did not do very well. And I guess did poorly enough and embarrassed the organization enough for them to send him down. But what do you remember about this?
Yeah, it's the 1 a.m. or not 1 a.m., 1 p.m. game after that. And he's at the casino, I believe, pictured at about 8 a.m. And just given the general time frame of a baseball player's day, that means he did not go home. That means he most likely, maybe went to the hotel, got, you know, whatever gear he needed, maybe changed his clothes, but he did not sleep. He went straight to the ballpark to play. Yeah.
So we're taking that roulette ball from the Chicago casino. All right, two more regular season ones. September 26th. Another somber day as the Oakland A's complete their tenure as the Oakland A's in Oakland. These were the final games for the A's. The A's winning that final game with Mason Miller closing it out. Bailey, what would you like to put in to commemorate these final days of the Coliseum?
So the most touching moment, I think, had to be after Mason Miller recorded the save, he gestured to the Oakland on his chest. I think that was a great moment. However, unfortunately, there is an object that better speaks to this moment and how this situation was handled. And that, unfortunately, is the ass hat, new era product that was released at a similar time. I believe it was actually taken off of shelves September 25th. So if you got an ass hat before then, congratulations. I think they were selling on eBay for a few hundred bucks a pop, but it is an A's logo. So that's the A'S. But also shadowed behind it is another A's logo where only the S is really pronounced, thus spelling ASS, thus making it the ass hat. That's also relevant because in this division at times with how the team logos work, you can have an ass hat ordering if you have the Oakland A's in first, followed by Seattle, followed by Houston, followed by the Angels, followed by the Texas Rangers. That can also spell out ass hat. So, it's a funny product for a very sad moment. The Oakland has not just lost the A's, they've lost the Raiders, who have came back and left once again. They've lost the Warriors to, you know, more around San Francisco. So it's a tough time to be an East Bay sports fan, but we will commemorate that with the ass hat.
And John Fisher made an ass hat of himself all season right. long. September 30th, game 161 and 162 between the Mets and Braves. One of the weirder scenarios we have had in recent memory, with both teams needing one win of a doubleheader to make the playoffs. One team won both. The Arizona Diamondbacks would move on, and game one was an absolute Looney Tunes fest. Back and forth, teams going to blows, an all-time historic game that meant absolutely nothing, because in game two, the Braves rolled out there and beat a Mets team that was, frankly, Bailey, you can admit, not particularly trying. There was the moment where Brandon Nimmo's sprint speed to first was clocked, like, 4 seconds slower than his season average for the guy who always runs hard, a moment that allegedly actually killed Pete Rose later that day. People don't know that, but that's what happened. But we're going to put into this a picture of Gio Urshela and Francisco Lindor celebrating together on the field after the doubleheader. Two guys who came up through Cleveland system, who've remained good friends. The image of both teams celebrating in the same place, matriculating back onto the field to put their arms around one another. That's what baseball's all about. And on the flip side, I'd like to put in the Diana Taurasi jersey that Diamondbacks skipper Torrey Lovello was wearing that day as he made his way around the Diamondbacks locker room to say goodbye to all of his players. Because you very rarely see a big league manager wearing a jersey of any other sport. And so just to see him in a basketball jersey was wild.
And that situation was, of course, totally, I don't know about unprecedented, but normally they all play the last day of the season at the same time. And so you don't have teams waiting to find out if they're going to get into the postseason. That's not really a situation that you ever have, but that was the case for the Snakes. And they found out we are not going to the postseason this time.
Very D3 baseball. Let's move on to the postseason. I know this is a long one, but guess what? You got a lot of traveling to do. It's Thanksgiving time. October 2nd, a team we have not mentioned yet, the Detroit Tigers. And you know that the Tigers won again. G-Mac Cash, the one and only. We're going to put the giant slide in Detroit, the whole dang thing, into the time capsule. Foolish, what were your interactions with G-Mac Cash's art?
To be honest with you, I'm not familiar with G-Mac Cash's work. Can you key me in a little bit, and also to the listeners at home?
G-Mac Cash is essentially this Detroit rapper who has really popped off recently. He is the origin behind calling Gretchen Whitmer Big Gretch.
Okay, I have heard of that.
And has come out with many a Detroit sports anthems, as well as Detroit kind of geography anthems, including a whole song about a giant slide that is very dangerous for people to ride down. The whole song is about how the giant slide, you can get really injured going down the giant slide. And so we are going to take the Detroit Giants slide and save the kind of innocent children who might once ride it someday in Detroit. We could also take the Detroit sign that he sings about as well. But I do think that the Giants slide and anything G-Mac Cash, we are just so pro G-Mac Cash. He has a Lion song. He's got a Tiger song. I don't believe he has a Pistons song, but that's probably not an accident. But we love G-Mac Cash. And so this was really when he unleashed the Tigers won again. And so we're going to put that in.
We're also going to put the giant slide in there because the Tigers did the opposite of a giant slide. I mean, they did a giant climb, right? Mm-hmm. Yes. And we don't want that slide around for Kerry Carpenter or Tarik Skubal to get hurt on.
No.
As they are cornerstones of this great Tigers giant rise. And so slide goes into the time capsule. Foolish, I can't wait for you to fall down the GMAT Cash rabbit hole when we're done recording. October 2nd. We'll also put in Baltimore, the whole thing, because the Orioles don't need it anymore. The massive wall all the way back there in Camden Yards, which played, frankly, a crucial role in the Orioles getting eliminated as Jordan Westberg clobbered a ball with a runner on base early in game one that was caught at the track that would have been gone in 29 other parks. And just represents the sad, soggy end to the Orioles season. October 7th, foolish San Diego Padres.
Sadly, on October 7th during the NLDS was marred by Manny Machado, who tried to assassinate Dodgers skipper Dave Roberts.
It's true.
Thankfully, the media was there to hold him accountable, including digging up sort of a Zapruder style film of this incident.
Yeah.
And I think the object we've got to put in there to commemorate this moment and commemorate also the Padres refusing to talk to the media after this is the dugout mesh that's arguably saved Dave Roberts' life. You know, what would have been if not for the dugout mesh that protected him from this absolute fireball that Manny Machado rifled his way.
Here's the thing about this, though. You could argue Dave Roberts ended up playing it perfectly. He created this goofy narrative on the off day that the Padres are then having to be asked about and then ignore, to the point where then the Dodgers were able to come back and win this series and win the World Series. I might argue this is some of Dave Roberts' best managerial work.
And I'll also point out something too here, having watched the video back. The first person to take offense at this action is not Dave Roberts. It's Teoscar, who's right next to him. And that was the key.
Mm-hmm. It's so true. But Teoscar, was his life in danger? Who's to say? On that same day.
The word that Dave Roberts used was unsettling, which is great because he was clearly settled. On that same day was the Cary Carpenter home run off Emmanuel Clase. And Emmanuel Clase allowing more runs in the postseason than he did in the regular season is just phenomenal stuff. And we're going to post his award rings.
He posted
a picture of a bunch of rings he had for various victories.
Yeah, basically, Clase having a tough postseason goes on Instagram and is like, yo, I'm still him. Don't you worry about this small sample size that might cost my team, you know, a chance to go to the World Series. I'm still the man. And I mean, it's true. He said one of the greatest relief seasons of all time, and then one of the worst postseasons we've ever seen. So we're going to have to take away some of his celebratory rings or awards to mark that, yes, he did earn those, but also that was probably not the time to flex them.
October 17th, one of the greatest games of the season. Jordan was in attendance, ALCS Game 3, the only game that the Gardos won in that series. But it will live forever over at the Prague. We are going to put a giant Christmas ornament that belongs to the Noel family, as Big Christmas deserves a place in our time capsule.
Yes, and Jonkenzie Noel did not hit the walk-off in this game, but the game-tying homer in the bottom of the ninth was so shocking. And for him, who had been trying to hit a home run for the previous 2 months after going ice cold since his awesome start to his career, it was everything. The call with Brian Anderson, Big Christmas, the nickname. Yes, David Fry, it's the walk-off. But that Jonkenzie home run, absolutely one of the swings we will remember the most from this season. So we will take a Big Christmas ornament from the Noel family if they can spare it.
Another postseason one we're going to toss in there is a Giancarlo Stanton Yankees hat, because he never wears it. Never really has to, because he's a DH. And he was one of the stories of October for this player, much maligned, often injured, being paid a lot of money to remind all of us that he is generational, that he is special, that he is unique, that he is capable of wowing us regularly. Giancarlo Stanton's hat. Because sure as hell, he does not need it. October 19th, that same day, a Juan Soto home run we'll never forget to send the Yankees to the World Series. Foolish, you'd like to take something from the stadium?
Yes, I would. I will take the dirt that was kicked up while Soto shuffled. He has a tendency to shuffle as the at-bat goes long. This was a fairly long at-bat. There was this sort of sense of inevitability building in this at-bat against Hunter Gaddis, where you felt like, you know, the longer it went on, the more that Juan Soto was going to break this game wide open, and that is exactly what happened. He is a famous shuffler. We will take the shuffled up dirt from the left-handed batter's box at Progressive Field.
We go to the World Series, and Freddie Freeman had a decent little run here. We know that Freddie Freeman was quite injured. First with an ankle that he injured at the end of the regular season, and then a secret rib injury that we did not know about until after the Dodgers won. The point is that Freddie was going through a lot. And we have to assume that leading up to the World Series, they had those extra off days. Game one, he goes up there against Nestor Cortes Jr., hits the first walk-off Grand Slam in World Series history. We have to assume that Freddie was taking some pretty good stuff to be feeling good enough to get into the box there and look as good as he did. So we're going to take whatever Freddie was taking to feel healthy enough to play, not just in the World Series, but really more so what he was doing to play in these earlier rounds when he clearly looked compromised. We know he missed some games, but whatever painkillers Freddie was taking, they were working. And we are going to take some of those and put them in the time capsule, because that walk-off Grand Slam, we will, of course, remember for a very, very, very long time.
Next up on our list, Shohei Ohtani's torn labrum. Foolish, were you still watching the baseball game at this point?
At the point when he tore his labrum?
Yeah, end of game. Yeah,
two. Yes, like, oh, I watched all of it. Yeah, he was sliding into second, right?
Yeah. So bizarre. Because that game felt done and dusted to the point that we weren't even really thinking about it that much. And for him, for us to see the best player in the world, Shohei Ohtani, just come up with his shoulder dinged up and the resulting confusion, Jordan, you remember being in the tunnel and Shohei being walked by you up out of the stadium before people could get in and ask him questions. I mean, what a thing that was.
And I think what we're going to do to remember this, because it's possible that this sort of moment gets lost to history because it doesn't really end up actually mattering that much over the course of the rest of the series. But at the start of game three in New York, he emerges from the dugout and he's got this like big heating thing that he's wearing. It wasn't a sling, but it was basically something to keep the arm warm. And it was like, is this dude really just about to play with this? And then he's holding it the whole time. And that whatever he was wearing when he came up for intros, and we were all like, what is going on? Because again, that's before we even know what the injury is. And the intrigue regarding that, of course, it doesn't end up mattering. The Dodgers end up winning anyway. But the confusion and the mystery around Ohtani, which again is still a theme of his everything, I think is worth recognizing here too, because it was a shocking moment when he got up after he slid there.
October 29th. World Series, Game 4. Mookie Betts jumps up to make a catch on the front row of the stands on the right field line of Yankee Stadium and is held. How would you, you're foolish, describe this scenario.
Yeah, it was he is held on by his arm and he's in this uncomfortable position where he's having to stretch out but also kind of bounce up and down on the ground. He actually could have gotten hurt during this. I'm glad he didn't. There was potential for injury in this action. And then while this happened, another fan reaches into the glove, pries that open, and the ball drops out. Of course, he had made the catch long before that, so it was called an out. But this was a two-man job.
Yeah. And so what item are we going to do here? Because again, this was a memorable scene, but you have a suggestion here?
I think we got to give the game five tickets that were, the drama was, will they be invited back? Are they banned? And eventually those game five tickets were redistributed. And I think we'll just have to take those because that's the game that they didn't get to go to because of their actions.
Spot on. And should be banned for probably much longer than that, I would say. So, but I agree because they were like, what do you mean? We can't come to the game. Yeah. No, it was a horrifically stupid thing to do. So you deserve not to go to the game. However, in retrospect, maybe it would have been more punishment for them to go to the game because in game five, the New York Yankees collapsed. And gentlemen, what item will we do as we wrap up here with just a couple more? How should we remember the fifth inning of Game 5 of the 2024 World Series? I think if we are going to zoom in on a single moment, it has to be... I think it's still Gerrit Cole not covering first, more than Aaron Judge dropping the fly ball, but I'm willing to be talked in the other direction. Perhaps I would nominate first base at the Yankee Spring Training Complex, AKA where you practice PFPs on the first day of spring training in February.
I would argue they're going to need that next year.
That's fine. They can afford another one. The base that was not practiced on enough. There was a lot of weird things about this play for sure, but I think that's still the moment I will remember even more than Judge dropping the fly ball. But what do you think, Jake?
I think that's perfect. I think this is a reminder of what wasn't more than what was. And so an empty void at one of the first bases on the backfields in Tampa is very fitting.
I agree with that. And then I do think Walker Buehler would be the one in terms of the end. I think the Hershiser jersey that he, of course, borrowed, the game used World Series one that he was wearing at the parade, is certainly a kind of an obvious one that we could take with Oral Hershiser's permission. But any other Walker Buehler ones, I could think of, like, maybe something involving his warmups. I mean, there's a lot of lore already involving Walker Buehler having not thrown a baseball before he got to the bullpen that day. It's a great thing. So there's a lot of Walker Buehler things that I think deserve recognition too. But we can also just go to the parade and wrap it up with the Dodgers.
I think it's the Oral jersey.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was just wearing that everywhere.
Yeah. But Foolish, I know you have one final Dodgers parade item to finish us off.
Yes, there were a lot of striking images from the Dodgers World Series parade and celebration. The most striking to me was Ice Cube's performance, which he'd already performed pregame for them. I think it was game two, it was game two. So he comes back out. They bring him back out for an encore. He's performing the song, "Today Was a Good Day." And Dave Roberts is next to him dancing on the blue carpet. And when Ice Cube says the line, "I can make that ass drop," Dave Roberts proceeds to drop that ass right on Ice Cube's lap. He essentially grinds on Ice Cube. And
dream come true. Dave Roberts basically said
we talked about this. I was at a wedding recently. I may or may not have made that ass drop in the vicinity of male friends, but those are dear friends, right? Those are friends I've known for many years. It's not an Ice Cube, Dave Roberts type of situation. And also what followed up this moment was the line from the song. This is the censored line, is, "I got a beep from Kim. She can do it all night." That is a reference to Ice Cube's wife of 30 years. So he is talking about hooking up with his wife, basically, right, in this song. He changes the lyric to, "I got a beep from Dave. He can do it all night."
He can manage all night.
He can win every game that's in prime time.
There were a few. He messed around and hit a double. He changed the lyrics there and said a triple double.
Maybe it should have been, "He could manage every night."
I do. He does. That's the gig. I will say, I am glad you're mentioning Ice Cube, because Fat Joe also probably belongs in the time capsule.
Fat Joe's Tim's. You don't get to wear Tim's anymore.
Fat Joe's Tim's that stomped on the mound and sucked the energy out of Yankee Stadium, I think, also belong in the time capsule. But yes, I do think Ice Cube, it was just so stark being in the stadium for both of those performances. It was like, yeah, I think that team's going to win.
The energy difference.
And that was exactly what happened.
Foolish Baseball, Jordan Schusterman, thank you both for the time. This was long, but it was good, and we hope everyone enjoyed it and has a wonderful holiday, whether you have a large table with tons of people or the opposite. You are part of a big, loving baseball community, a baseball Barbacast community, our community. We love you. We are thankful for you, grateful for you. That's all I got. Thank you. I would never put either of you in the time capsule.
Oh, thanks, man. I am thankful for you, Jake. I'm thankful for our producers, Emmy Franks and Andrew Hartz, for making this pre-recorded episode possible. And thank you, Mr. Foolish Bailey, for all that you do in this baseball internet space. We have been very fortunate to get to know you and call you a friend over the years. I consider myself a massive fan of your work, and I am lucky that I get to call and talk ball with you every once in a while. And thank you for granting us so much of your time to join us here on this time capsule journey. So final thoughts, please plug anything, and then we will officially say goodbye.
You find me on YouTube, Foolish Baseball or Foolish Bailey. You can find me on Twitter/X, Foolish BB, and also now on Blue Sky, Foolish BB there as well.
Find him
Instagram
at Blue Sky.
Where people steal his work.
Find him. Yes. Find him at Blue Sky Pest Control. He is all set up over there, made the jump recently. So thank you, Bailey. Thank you, Jake. Thank you to our producers. You go ahead and email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. Everyone have a safe and happy holidays, and we will talk to you next week. Goodbye.